scared to tweet something out, knowing that there's so many followers. So I'm not very careful, but I just want to be like, I don't want to like mess up, you know, like just do something stupid because you've seen so many mistakes made by people that they regret, you know. So I do think about it quickly, and I know I don't go into that direction where I do crazy, but I must say, I've really, like you said, I've enjoyed it, you know. I've come up with these like things from time to time which have just become very like just natural. All of a sudden I have time, I'm like, okay, let me see what's out there, and next thing you know, it became this interactive world.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here, Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. I'm on vacation this week, but thought we would do something a little different. This is audio from an interview I had with Roger Federer almost a year ago to the day. Here are some outtakes. We did this at a hotel in Toronto. This was one of my favorite tennis interviews, and I thought I would share some of the highlights with you guys. So this is something of a hashtag throwback Thursday. This is a year ago again, and you'll forgive the noise from the hotel lobby, folks. But this is a few minutes with Roger Federer. I'm John Wertheim, and that's this week's SI Tennis Podcast.
Where are you right now? Like, what's 32, 33-year-old?
First of all, I can't believe how old I am. You know, like, when I hear the numbers, I'm like, I don't feel like that. I think if you ask many players, time goes by way too quick on the tour. It's like, can't believe we're already in August, you know, of the season. Can't believe I'm turning 33. Like, it feels like it's like on fast forward, you know. It always feels
right.
It's moving along really quickly, but I feel I'm in a great place. I'm feeling so much better than I did last year. Family's great, and I was happy leaving yesterday, you know, after being comfortable at home. And it's always for me one of those tests, you know, like, would I rather still stay at home, or am I happy to go on the road again? And I was so happy to get back on the road again, and I have, you know, I love Switzerland. We had a great time there, you know, caught up with friends and family, and at the birthday of the girls, and we had everything going. But at the end of the day, even Mirka and me, we just love packing things up and just going on the road again, you know, and then come here and haven't been here in a while. We always see the positives, you know, of the traveling. It's really mostly the packing and unpacking, which is the toughest part, you know.
Yeah,
things in the organization, you know.
But I was thinking, like, you know, Andre, it's like, I fell out of love with tennis, and then I had to fall back in love. Like, you've never really lost your...
Never really. I mean, like, I struggled early on in my career. In terms of, I wouldn't want to go to practice, or I would play for 45 minutes and just feel so flat, or just like not enjoy it, and or sometimes not understand why I'm doing this, or can I not do it tomorrow, you know, those kind of feelings. And eventually, I think because I had so much of it between 16 and 21, let's just say, that's when I had it. So in a way, I'm happy I had it so early, but at the same time, it was for me this it was tearing me up as well. It was just hard, you know, because I would come out on court 9 in the morning for practice, and there was the other guy, the professional, jumping up and down, already sweating because he's been warming up, and I'm rolling straight from bed going like, ugh, my coach told me to practice at 9, and here I am, and 1 hour later you're down 6-1, 4-1, and the hour is over, and you're like, that wasn't worth it, you know, like, what am I doing, you know? So I had so many of these moments that I guess eventually I just said, you know, like, I'm not going to waste practices anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to be professional. And in the process, I started to really enjoy it, you know. I think what Agassi had later on, I had early on. I guess I can compare it this way. It's really interesting. I don't know why. And today, I love practice. My favorite is when nobody's watching. It's just like, I feel I can really, be a clown, or like I can be how I really am. I feel right away when there is a crowd, I feel, you know, I'm being watched, people are taking pictures, people are filming, people are analyzing, so I go more into the zone where I'm like, okay, let's make this a good practice, let's try to work on what we wanted to do. And, you know, it's not as fun, but it is, I still enjoy it, you know, at the end of the day, because I make people happy because they can see me, and at the same time I can do what I love doing most. So.
Have you, I was thinking most of us, you have kids and you sort of have to recalibrate your work day. I mean, has this been a big adjustment or no?
Kids in general?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
absolutely. I think everybody
like,
who has kids, has to check things out again, you know? It has a huge impact on your life. I mean, 24/7, you think of what are the kids up to. You know, like right now, I know what all my four kids are doing. You know, so like you just know, and you know, like in an hour, it's a different situation. Maybe they're gonna have a dinner, or we need to put them to bed, or I would like to get back to read goodnight stories, or you know, you kind of know. So it's like the trains going at the same time, even though you're not with them, you know. So I think it has a huge impact on your life, and after all the sacrifice I've done for tennis, you know, you do the same thing for your kids, you know, so it's great doing all of it at the same time and seeing that we're able to stay together, you know, with Mirka and like really enjoy it and pass our values on to them. And now it become really getting into this interesting phase with the kids where you feel like they're becoming these little people and characters and personalities, and now we can have the most fun conversations with them. Just before, again, when I came down, it was unbelievable, just the things they're saying. And then, you know, the little ones are so little, you forget how little they really are.
But you,
it's good fun, I must say, and every city has different things to offer, so I think it's quite entertaining, actually, for us to travel
when
like
you're,
that.
When you're a band on the menu, you're not alone very much, are you?
Mm-mm. America used to be more like a person who needed to be alone from time to time, you know, just like go wander in the city, just like get away and like just like go have coffee by yourself, you know. I'm like, how boring is that, you know? Like,
right, yeah.
I love having people around. I love like having like an open house, you know, at the hotel or in my place. People can always come around, and I feel super odd when I went to Shanghai by myself last year or to Monaco this year, and I get back to my room and there's like nobody there. It's like,
what do I do?
Like, I don't know, I don't like it, you know. So I give keys to my coach and my physio and like just come by, you know, like, so that we end up hanging out together the whole time, and I can't wait to get back then. But you know, I miss the family, but at the same time I know it's not always possible to be with them, and that's fine. But it clearly has had a huge impact, but I'm happy it didn't sort of pull me away from tennis, you know. That's the first worry I had 5 years ago. No, I thought it's going to have a huge impact on practice. You know, I thought I was not going to be able to practice as much as I need to, and then I thought my schedule was going to be cut by, you know, 30% or something. But it didn't happen. I'm playing full schedules, and I'm able to manage it at the end of the day. So I'm actually, that was a surprise for me, that it didn't have a bigger impact in terms of my playing schedule.
What? All right. So what's been the biggest? What's been the biggest change, you think, since 32 versus 22?
Well, the game has evolved, you know, as we know. Racket technology, and also, I think especially string, has had a big impact. And then movement, because of slow courts and all that, has become more aggressive, especially the parallel movement. More and more guys play for the baseline. So I think I've had to adjust to that. Because back in the day, there was 30% guys serve volleys, you know, the aggressive baseline are 30%, and then 30% retrievers, let's just say, in a nutshell. And I would always play like the other guy played a little bit, and then next thing you know, it's like 90% are playing the same way, aggressive baseliners. That's basically the norm now, because everybody has a good serve, everybody has a good forehand, everybody has a good backhand, don't usually volley so well, but it's all pretty much the same, you know. So you get stuck into the same rallies more often, which in a way is more predictable, which is easier, but at the same time, it's, for me, not as fun sometimes as it used to be, where one day you come in, you play the retriever, one day you play the aggressive guy. I kind of like that change, but that to me has been a big change, and just, you know, how do you manage your experience, I guess, you know, because experience can be a very good thing, but I feel sometimes it can also be like a hindrance. It's like, I don't know, you're not playing as free as you're supposed to be, because you're playing the percentages too much, and that sometimes,
no, that's
yeah, and sometimes that's not as much fun, because you know, like, what the percentages are, and it becomes too calculated. So I like to play free-flowing tennis, so I always have to remind myself to play like a junior sometimes.
And I wanted to ask you about that too. But I was thinking, if you'd asked me that, I'd say social media.
Oh yeah.
Just totally. What? No, but you've really seemed to have taken to it.
It took me a while, then.
It did. Yeah.
It took me a while.
You were late to the party.
I mean, I did start with Facebook slowly, and
so it seems like you're really.
And then Twitter, I started it last year at the French. It took me a lot of convincing. I had a lot of talks with everybody. Just I wanted to get informed. I didn't quite understand the idea, and everybody uses social media in a different way. I find, you know, some use it as information coming to you. Some guys really open and just say, "Look, I'm having an espresso right now," which to me is like, "What?" You know, like, so that's I thought that's what I have to do, and then until people explain me, no, you do whatever you want, you know, like you. Then I just said, well, if I do it, it needs to be me, you know, like I need to. I mean, I'm scared to tweet something out, knowing that there's so many followers. So I'm not very careful, but I just want to be like, I don't want to like mess up, you know, like just do something stupid because you've seen so many mistakes made by people that they regret, you know. So I do think about it quickly, and I know I don't go into that direction where I do crazy, but I must say, I've really, like you said, I've enjoyed it, you know. I've come up with these like things from time to time which have just become very like just natural, you know, like from all of a sudden I have time, I'm like, okay, let me see what's out there, and the next thing you know is like, I think it was in Wimbledon especially, like I took a picture of the sky, I was like, well, send me your sky, whatever, and what do you see in the sky, because I see this, and they're like, it's like 15 different things other people saw, which I didn't see, and like, you know, it became this interactive world, and it seemed like a very friendly place overall, which I actually was quite surprised, because
but you sort of set the tone, right?
What's that?
No, you set the tone, if you...
Well, but then let's say I read the press sometimes, and nowadays you have the blogs, right? At the end of an article, and those to me seem very mean, quite often. Right, that's what I'm saying. So I thought that's how it is as well in the social media, which to me it's not so bad, you know. It's actually much, much more positive. And it's actually super supportive, which I must say, so when you do go in, it's actually, you actually feel like, you know, people like me, you know, and like it makes me feel good, or people like what I'm saying, or people appreciate the insight they get, because that was my idea, to give them extra insight which nobody else has, and you know, feed them with something they didn't maybe know. So I think it's actually been quite nice, even also for me, you know, because I'm really doing it for the followers, you know.
So I was thinking, like, when LeBron James, you followed LeBron James, is like
a little bit.
He goes back to Cleveland. Tony's very happy.
Yeah, I guess so.
But it was clear that he really cared about perception. He really cared about how he knew how he was perceived, and he cared.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? How much do you care? How attuned do you think you are of the perception out there? Like, he really knew what people, what the criticism was.
Well, LeBron, you mean, and he just wanted to make sure that he covered all bases,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, I get that, because I think it was very sensitive because it was his home. So I can relate to that a little bit with my situation in Basel, which I had a difficult one with. You know, the last couple of years now have been quite difficult for me. And I think when it involves something so personal, you become very, actually, you want to do the right thing. Because that's where you do live, that's where your family is, that's where your friends are. And that's where you, I guess in a perfect world, that's where you want to be most loved or most welcome. You know, you don't want to feel like we don't want you anymore. So it, with him, it's more extreme, because he's really going to go there and play. I only go there once a week now, you know, in a year. But I can relate to it a little bit, but I think in his case it has a bigger magnitude because of the Basel tournament is much smaller, you know. But there as well, I was extremely careful of what should I say, what should I do, just because my parents live there, and I know how do we manage the situation? It was a difficult one, you know. So I understand where he's coming from, but you can't care all the time, you know. And I think it's, at the end of the day, it needs to be natural. And if it's too planned and everything, I think it shows, you know, in my opinion. But I think I have a good balance, you know. So I as long as I feel comfortable, you know, that's important. Yeah.
We don't want to ask about everyone says, oh, it's so efficient, like, you know, such an easy trope, right? It's so punctual and so efficient and precise. Right. But do you feel like your Swiss heritage, I mean, do you feel that express itself in your game?
In my game?
Like, what's the effect of Switzerland on your, I don't know, I mean, do you feel like Swiss culture is part of your professional?
I think our Switzerland is a very interesting place, you know, because of the four languages we speak in our country. I've lived in many places within Switzerland, in the French-speaking part where I went to the, you know, National Tennis Center, but then also on the border where you speak French and German in one city, in Biel, where the National Tennis Center is now. Lived in Basel, live in the mountains now, lived in Zurich. So I've really been around, you know. And everywhere it's different. Every half an hour you drive, the accent changes. And I don't want to say people are different, but it's a very diverse place. There is a lot of integration from outside, from foreigners coming in. We have a high number in, you know, foreigners coming in. So I think, who is the real Swiss? You know, it's a tough question to answer, really. But it is an amazing place to grow up in. We have all the opportunities in Switzerland, and obviously my mom being South African, my dad being more from the mountainside, you know, towards Austria. I think I definitely got the. They were serious, but not too serious, you know, and they gave me the freedom I needed. So in that sense, I think I was very fortunate. Discipline, I mean, I had, like I said, I had a hard time being disciplined. It took me a while, you know, but thankfully, eventually, and I got it, you know. So I don't know how to really say. Switzerland's been good for me, I think, overall, you know. It's been always very supportive, and they don't lose it, you know, when you do something really big. They keep you grounded, and they want you to, everybody's supposed to be equal, and I love that about Switzerland. Even at the same time, you think, like, why can't we be more euphoric, you know, sometimes? Why can't we, like, go crazy? Well, we do sometimes, but very rarely, but we come right back to who we really are, and from that standpoint, I think it's actually a very comfortable place to live in, yeah.
What about, I was thinking everybody, the other thing is that he's so artistic, right? You hear that attached to you a lot. Mm-hmm. I always wondered this, what kind of art, like, inspires you? Like, what sort of art do you like?
The thing is, like, I used to not like it in the beginning, art, for instance, or I didn't understand how can you get inspired by things, you know? I really didn't get that for a very long time until I met certain people, until I went to art galleries, or you listen to certain music, or I'd be in the car, or whatever it is, you know, like, and you just drift off a little bit, and I've gotten that much more in the last years, I think, more than ever. And I do, maybe it's also because I feel like I need more motivation and inspiration to be able to perform well, whereas in the beginning, it's just like, you're so excited. It's like in a little kid in a candy store, right? You're like, I'm playing against the guys I saw on TV. So you don't need any more inspiration. So today maybe I'm looking more for it. And modern art. I like modern art, yeah. More. I mean, even though I like, I think it's unbelievable what they used to do in the past, you know, like older things, you know. That, to me, it's just like mesmerizing how they did that. But I kind of like modern art, you know. I need to like it, clearly, if I want to have it at my home. Like, I couldn't, like, put something up I, like, really don't like, but it's supposed to be the thing that I don't believe in, you know. But, I can really get inspired by those things in a way I can't explain. And it's been good for me to have an open mind, to not just think tennis all the way. I think that's the one of the things I've done so well over the years is basically when I finish my practice, basically I switch off. I get into the car.
What are, like, two things, nothing to do with tennis and family, that you like to do? Like, I always said that, you know, yeah, you're into this, but you have your own.
Yeah, no, I mean,
what are two things you like?
For me, it's really friends, you know, catching up with friends and just doing that. And then if I do have extra time, it's like just sometimes having nothing to do, you know, just like going for a coffee. When I'm on vacation, going to the beach and just like listening to the waves and just like, really, it's very quiet because I live in this busy life that the more relaxed, the more slow pace it is, the better it is sometimes. But then if I can do exciting stuff like, you know, go sledging or go skiing. Or the problem is now over time I've really stopped doing any sport. All I do now is like during Wimbledon I played ping pong, you know, like you run around the table with my friends and all that. I did that, but all the other sports I unfortunately had to put on the back burner just because I'm just too scared to get injured at this point, you know. But I used to go play squash and skiing and badminton and basketball and soccer, and just realized that my body is so tennis oriented that I'm just too scared now. So, and that obviously that took a big place in my life doing other sports, and I've put that away. So now it's a family clearly, and has taken, you know, that part in my life, you know.
Whenever 10 years from now, whatever it is, is there a part of you that says, I did these magical things, like wondrous
these
stuff on
things?
A tennis court? I did this magic on the tennis court. What am I going to do in my next phase that's going to compete with?
No, I don't see it that way. I don't see, like, I need to come close to whatever I achieved on a tennis court. For me, it's, like, so separate. Like, tennis is, for me, isolated. It's just, like, it's been this most incredible journey, and like, yeah, just something that gave me all these opportunities to travel and do all these cool things. It's been quite I never thought it would be like this way. I just thought it was going to be tennis, a little bit of press maybe, and like maybe the odd sponsor, I don't know, like I didn't even see that, you know. And it's been so much more such a great learning experience that this will never, anything will ever come close. I believe that now. Maybe we do another interview in 20 years and say, like, I did the most incredible things after tennis. But clearly, I don't know, I will do quite different things, but I'd like to stay involved in tennis. My foundation clearly is going to become, I'll have finally more time to do to travel, to go see projects and maybe do some more fundraising. Clearly that's something I want to do. But then as well, I've always been, as you know, been very involved in the business, you know. I've always wanted to know what's going on. I've always wanted to make sure that, like, everybody kind of knows, like, that we're the same, we have the same opinion, and, like, let's try to make the best out of it, you know. And so I don't know where it's going to take me yet. And I feel like I don't want to think too far ahead, and because the more I think after tennis, the closer I am to the end. And I don't want to be there, you know. I can figure it out once it's all said and done, you know.
But do you ever feel like you have all this, you were saying before, like you have the experience and you play the percentages and you don't play like a junior. But do you ever think like, how to put this? When I was 23, I'm just going out there and I'm just...
Nothing to lose?
Nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, not every shot, not every point, but all of a sudden you're like at 5-all in the tiebreaker, second set, you know. I remember this moment, I think it was against Alex Radulescu in Toulouse, second round qualies, 98. And it was, I think, 5-all, maybe second serve, and he was serving volleying, I think, you know, first, second serve. I was like, I'm going to go inside out backhand, like Becker style, you know. And I just, like, drilled the backhand in the corner. I would maybe do 1 out of 10 of these. But I did it, 6-5, served it out, 7-6, 7-6, and I made the quarters. You know, like sometimes I wish like that I still said, you know what, this particular point right now I'm just going to go crazy. And I sometimes do, but it's more forced than back in the day when you just like say, this is what I'm going to do and I know it's going to work. I know it is because I know I can do it, but I can only do 1 out of 10, but it will come right now when it matters the most.
So how do you convince yourself to do that?
I know I can hit great shots. So.
Right.
Because of its history, I know I can, but it's something that it goes against logic, because 1 out of 10 back in the day was, one was enough, that's all you need. But today, 1 out of 10 is not enough, because you go like, chances are so slim. So it's just the way you see it, and it's scary, you know, when you see that sometimes. So
you can't overcome your rational.
No, but that's where confidence comes in, and that's where, you know, either we talk too much about it or not enough, but confidence is a huge thing in tennis or in sports in general. It's a hard thing to explain, but it's really that either makes you win or lose sometimes. It really is. And last difference, I lost my confidence, and just like instead of serving it out, you won't. Or instead of making that break point, you won't, or you just won't get lucky because you've played too passive. It's just like these little details, you know?
Yeah. You're open about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the action has much a bigger place in sports than we sometimes think it is. Same with home court advantage. I never figured that one out. I never thought home court advantage, who cares? You know, like, it's the same thing. But it's when you have home court advantage, I feel like you dare to try things out and risk. And risk pays.
When you mean?
And it makes your opponent nervous if he feels he's against the crowd, and you feel like it's going to pay off if you play aggressive. Let's just say. And the funny thing is, at the end, it somehow always does.
I would say you have home court advantage.
Very often.
Every time you play.
Quite often. Yeah, quite often actually, which is great. So it's definitely been helpful to have crowd support.
How much? I don't know if you know, yeah, we talk about sort of the federization of tennis.
The federal what?
Like, you don't want to hear this, but, you know, the federization, like, you really have a big impact on the whole culture. I talked to Carolyn yesterday. She's in New York.
Who?
Wozniak.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She said, Roger's so nice. Like, how much was this intentional?
What about?
That your sort of ethic, I think, is really affected all. I mean, how much of that was
for me, it was
by design, and how much of that
I think I just needed to get in check my losing. I just needed to figure out how to lose, not in style, but like keep it together. Because I used to always break down crying when I was younger until, I mean, honestly, a long time. So that became obviously embarrassing to a degree at one point. And the problem is, like, once you're in this big limelight, so let's say what, like, Stan is in now, or, you know, like, once you've won this big one, or you've been world number one, you're supposed to always be humble and good. And sometimes I feel like it's gotten too much. Like, everybody has leaned towards, like, oh, I'm not the favorite, or guy played great.
Right.
It's always the same thing, you know, from everybody. And I miss the feistiness sometimes, because I do believe there is a place for feistiness in the press room, even on the court. As long as you play according to the rule, but for that we have the umpires that need to keep us in line, you know.
Do you wish there was more friction?
I sometimes wish there was more, you know, more aggressive characters, you know. And sometimes that's why I like the guys who are actually a bit cocky or confident. Like, I like that, you know. I think it's important to be as well. Not silly, you know, but still really believing, you know. And I was like that when I was younger, you know, but me, my hero was Edberg, so, and he was very humble, you know.
Yeah.
And even Jordan, I don't know how, I only know the surface of Jordan, but to me he always seemed like he was style, you know. He was classy. I don't know if he was not like that here in the States. I don't know what his perception was, but for me that's how I saw him. I always saw him, this elegant guy who was always cool in winning and in defeat, you know. That's kind of how I saw it. So for me it was obvious also to wanting to be like that eventually. I just said, like, I need to not go overly crazy when I win, even though trends have definitely gone the other way. Like, you know, when you do win, everybody lies on the floor now, runs into the crowd, whatever. I wish sometimes we wouldn't go so crazy, because back in the day it was just a handshake and the jump over the net. So I remember how it used to be, but I understand that the pressure is so great on us today, the focus is so big on us, everybody's like, what is he going to do? You see other sports going absolutely ballistic when they win a point, and we have only this one moment at the very end, and unfortunately we miss that person to hug when you win, so we're left by ourselves, it's over, and it's like this weird feeling, so what are you going to do? So I understand that people want to share their emotions or whatever it is, you know, but
That's how I, of course I do.
You know, I really do miss that moment. That's why winning in doubles is actually sometimes is unbelievably cool, you know, because you have right away that guy you can run to. But, I mean, I just want the game to be represented the right way. I think tennis is a very classy sport. I think it is important at the end of the day to stay humble, because nobody is bigger than the game. The game will always be bigger than anybody, because players come and go. And I think if you know that, that's fine, you know.
But you're... It sounds like you're... This is a different life than you led when it was 10 years ago, when you're coming off of Wimbledon.
Entirely,
and this is... Are you any less fulfilled than you are 10 years ago?
less fulfilled.
No, I mean, it seems like you're very different. Your existence is very different. Whether it's
I can enjoy it so much more off the court. On the court, I was probably enjoying it a bit more back in the day when I was, you know, winning 5 to 10 tournaments a year. Let's just say now, unfortunately, I don't win as much anymore, which I miss. You know, I really miss that feeling of going every second tournament, going on to win it and leaving with a trophy. It was an amazing feeling, you know, I must tell you. But today, in my personal life, like, or just away from it all, I feel so much happier. I don't feel so stressed, because I felt like this need to prove everybody and this running around and, you know, being invited to a photo shoot or a gala or the red carpet, and it would all freak me out, you know, all this show business world. Really, for me, uncomfortable, and it took me a while to get used to that, you know, that attention, and that whatever I said was going to be picked up, and that's the reference, because now you are world number one, and now people want to know what you think about certain issues, which has nothing to do with tennis. And in the beginning, I didn't quite understand that. People didn't quite know me enough, so they would misquote me quite often, and I felt misunderstood. So I would sometimes feel on edge, you know, because I was just not... It was all new for me, and I think that's what was hard for me in the beginning, but at the same time, it is an unbelievable experience, you know, and then wanting to defend, wanting to show it again, wanting to be successful, that drive was so big that you forget about all these bad times eventually, but now, looking back, I remember how hard it actually was, you know.
You like being Roger Federer, and all that comes with it.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise I would stop, you know, like if I'd say I have enough of this, you know. But I really do enjoy, like you said, the crowd support I get so often now. And I felt like I've worked so hard for it to maybe have it now. Because I do remember how it was to play on court 7 in front of 50 people on a windy day. And it was so hard for me, you know. And then when I got put on center court or second court, and it was so much easier for me to play, so much more fun, and I felt like that's why I wanted to become this tennis player, you know, trying to play for trophies, trying to play for the fans, in front of those fans, because I feel that's what gets the best out of me. That's what I enjoy today, because I mean, I get center court almost every single time, so to be motivated this way is so easy, you know, whereas if they now start to put me on court 4 every time, I don't know, it'd be rough.
Something tells me...
That'd be rough for me, you know. So I hope the tournament directors are going to be nice to me in the future.
Thanks again, everyone. That was Roger Federer again. That was an interview we did almost a year ago to the day in 2014. I'm John Wertheim. Thanks for listening.